The little bits of history repeating.
Good morning, it's 21 past 12. First Scots Almanac, March 3. Now on this day, let's go back to, let's go back 10 years. The year 2000. Gone but not forgotten. Another Bushism. I do miss the guy. Mind you, he wasn't even president when he said this one. So this should have been a bit of a red flag, a bit of a warning. But anyway, we missed the signs. Presidential hopeful George W. Bush was giving a speech about energy policy. And he said that he wouldn't support the removal of energy-producing dams, hydroelectricity, simply because they endangered fish. Everything was going smoothly in the speech until he decided to say this. I know the human being and the fish can coexist peacefully, quote unquote. Well, he was right. History does have no record of any major fish uprising.
Jeff Berzicott.
Phone 8223-0000.
Interactive Radio, 1395, Adelaide's 5AA.
There's a worry. The open line is 8223-0000 if you want to be part of the show this morning. And time to catch up with Craig Ishwood from the Citizens Electoral Council. Good morning, Craig.
Morning, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well?
Yeah, I'm doing very well, thanks.
Beautiful.
Yep.
Did you get into the Olympics?
Oh, I watched a little bit of it. It's pretty fascinating stuff. I always like to watch the Aussies win the odd gold.
Well, yeah, we got a couple.
Yeah, we've got more than pastimes, I believe.
Can you believe? And God help anyone who gets done for drugs. You might have just heard the chat about the Slovenian athlete who competed with 5 broken ribs and the punctured lung. Mm. But anyone who gets done for performance-enhancing drugs from now on, they'll hold her up as the poster child and say, look, you know, she did that. That to carry her onto the podium without any drugs. You know,
that's what willpower can do, and you really want to get something done, eh?
Absolutely.
It's really to break through that pain barrier is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, it's just amazing. Yeah. The big news today, of course, is interest rates went up. Has to be a good thing, doesn't it?
That's more pain barriers for some people, I think.
Well, for some people. The flip side is you've got... It's always 50-50. You know, people with mortgages like me, you go, ooh, hurts a little bit, but, oh, well. But people on savings and, you know, pensioners and what have you, they go, well, that's more money for us. That's got to be good. And I guess it's overall, it's an indicator of an economy heading north.
I think it's smoke and mirrors, Jeff. That's what concerns me is because if you read between the lines, even in the local press today, you can see a steamroller coming down the hill out of control in terms of the economy. And I think, you know, the intention over the next several months is to raise the interest rates up to close to the 5% level again,
right,
maybe so they can get dropped again. But the reason I'm saying it's a steamroller is because of some you always ask me what evidence I've got or what indications I've got to say what I say. Well, what I found today in The Age was absolutely stunning in that the ASIC held a summer school, just over the last couple of days, and the article reads, "No Escape for Australia, Market Chief Warns." And this is what the officialdom is saying. They're saying Australia is unlikely to avoid an imminent economic downturn caused by the excessive government debt, a top European markets regulator says.
Right.
He says, prepare for a very difficult economic time, which you will not be able to escape. This guy is the Netherlands Authority for the Financial Markets Chairman, Hans Hoogenvorst. Now, he told this to the Australian Securities Investment Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what he's talking about, and this is not, you know, this is not headline news in Australia, but it's extremely well known amongst financial circles.
And the first question, I suppose, is who is this Hans guy, and what's his track record, and what are his credentials? Because anybody can say anything.
No, he's one of the central bankers.
Right.
He's on the same podium as our Reserve Bank Governor, Glenn Stevens, and other Reserve Bank governors. This was a meeting of central bankers. So this is the elite creme de la creme, you might say, of the monetarist system talking.
Well, they can't be taking too much heed, because if he's saying there's a world of pain on the way, then why would the Reserve Bank raise rates to be, you know, putting the brakes on the economy a little bit?
Well, it's not necessarily got to do with the domestic economy. I think it's got more to do with the Australian carry trade. You see, you have these manipulations with large volumes of money coming in and out of the country. And in Australia's case, our interest rates are 4%, which is much higher than many other countries around the world.
Yep.
So what happens is you get these large banks and large, mainly banks, but they borrow money from the United States and maybe Japan at next to zero or zero interest rates. take that money into Australia, put it in our banks, and then they make 4% interest in it.
So yeah, they'll be making it. Yeah,
and that's
right.
Called carry trade. So what that brings liquidity into the system. So, you know, that's why I say smoke and mirrors, because, the economy is overheating and this, that, and the other thing. But hang on a sec. What are the international factors saying, well, we've got to keep this liquidity coming? So the important thing is, what most people don't realize, is that you have this big problem now with the sovereign default of government debt in a lot of the European countries.
I think Greece is a bit wobbly.
Well, Greece is actually not as bad as, say, Spain. In particular, Spain is a bigger economy and a much bigger exposure to this problem of default. But the European Monetary Union came out about 3 weeks ago now and referred to the group, a special group of five nations. They actually called them the PIGS, the PIGS.
It's a charming name. What does it stand for again?
Yeah, PIGS. It's Portugal,
that's right.
Italy, Ireland, Greece, and Spain.
Mm.
Now, between these countries, they owe 2.9 trillion euro. And we're talking about sovereign default here, which, if that happens, that's going to send a complete shudder, not just a shudder, but a potential breakdown crisis through the entire world's financial and credit markets, which
Why?
Means that
well,
if they try and get credit,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to be available.
The only question is, I wonder if someone like Greece, great spot, love to go there, but if, you know, shut up shop and pull down the blinds tomorrow, we wouldn't know it on the other side of the world. Like, in terms of what's their slice of the pie on the world economy?
Well, the debt, this is like a debt bomb.
Yeah.
They have 120, they owe the banking system and others 120% of their gross national product.
Right.
In other words, they're completely bankrupt. Now, if they can't get the credit, then they're going to default on the banks. And then those banks, because there's so much speculation in the system, like happened to the GFC back in 2007, the entire international credit market freezes up.
Mm.
Now, you come back to the same time that these comments were being made by the European Monetary Union, and, you know, Wayne Swan announced that the Rudd government was going to take the bank guarantees off the Australian banks. In other words, by the end of March, there's no more bank guarantees.
Well, we don't need it anymore.
Well, that's what they're saying. But at the present time, you have the foreign debt alone for the Australian banks is $827 billion.
Tell me something. The banks would be insured against bad debts and what have you.
Yeah, but that's only at a local level, Jeff.
But what about, I mean, when you talk about these big countries and borrowing their money on this huge level, whether we're borrowing it from the World Bank or what have you, look, phenomenal numbers, you know, how many trillion, squillion dollars?
Well, 2.9 just for five countries.
Yeah.
There's still another eight countries besides that.
Okay.
They've got a massive, massive debts. I mean, this has been built up over the last, 20 years,
right.
Particularly with the deregulation of the financial system.
So the fuse is lit. When do you think it'll blow?
Well, it's in the process of blowing up now, because one of the reasons the illusion is being kept alive in Europe is you have the world's largest, third largest bank called Bank Santander, which is actually normally Spanish bank, but it's also made up of a conglomeration of very old banks that have, in a sense, been pulled together for the last 30 years. They came together as a what's called an inter-alpha grouping. Now, what they've been doing is borrowing money from the United States and taking it to Brazil. Now, Brazil, since 2001, had the president Lula. You can get this money at 0% interest from United States and take that money down and invest in the Brazilian real at 8.75% interest.
Mm.
And not only that, but over the course of just 12 months, just last year, that money actually appreciated, the real appreciated by 27%. So people have taken $1 million down into Brazil, like these bankers. They earn 37.5% on their money, or $375,000 on $1 million.
Not bad.
These are only book entries, right? They're only ledger accounts. It's not like you're carrying suitcases of cash around. And it's a Ponzi scheme. It only works as you keep putting money into the system.
Sure.
So as soon as you stop getting the cash flows and people want their money, they want their interest payments, they want their money back, the whole thing comes crashing down, and that's where the danger lies.
Now, how does this affect us?
Okay, specifically, Australia has $827 billion of foreign debt in our banking system. What's worse is that $441 billion of that debt has to be turned over every 90 days, which means our banks have to go into the foreign markets and look for liquidity in order to turn over that debt. Now, if they can't get that liquidity, if they can't borrow that money and the government's taken the guarantee off, what do you think is going to happen to the internal economy of Australia? You're going to have all sorts of companies trying to call in as much money as they can, all sorts of tight credit squeezes internally, and that's the danger. So this is why we're so governed by external factors, and not just internal. I mean, look...
The thing is, it never seems to really pan out that way. As much as we... you're not the only person to say that, you know, we're so exposed to what's happening around the world, but as time goes on, the sky keeps failing to fall, and we actually seem to be chugging on quite fine as the rest of the world falls over.
Well, see, again...
I'm just waiting for it to happen.
Well, see, what's happening in our economy, Jeff... is that we are seeing a net shift away from industries such as farming, agriculture, yep. manufacturing, and even tourism now is being bemoaned as falling away, and we're ending up with these massive mining ventures which are literally coming in and digging our country up and exporting away raw materials. And the current government's attitude, and even the Reserve Bank's attitude, is, oh, look, let as much money come in as you possibly can.
Mm. Well, we've got a state election happening in around about 17 days, and our Labor Party, that's what they're banking on. Defence and mining is the future of this state.
Well, so that's not a future, because there are going to be limits as to how much you can dig out of the ground, and the point is, what are you going to leave behind for future generations?
Well, in 200 years' time, I'm sure they'll think of something else. Think of where we were 200 years ago. You know, it's a long time, so it might sound a little blasé to go, they'll worry about it in 200 years, but I'm sure they will.
I think that the other issue that you've got, which sort of gloves into this, which is actually a cultural issue, is this issue of street crime that you mentioned off-air before, and the punishment issues, and why is it seeming to be increasing? Now, Angry Anderson got on the TV today and said, oh, it's got to do with the racial mix or whatever coming into Australia.
He's
I don't agree with that at all.
No, I don't agree with him at all.
I think it's got to do with the fact that you're looking at an economy, a service-based economy, where the idea of actually producing real wealth, producing large-scale projects where you can stand back and say, look, you know, look what we did, look what we built. Now, this is the same mentality, the same great sense of achievement that my parents and alike would say about the Snowy Mountain scheme, where they would go as kids, not my parents, but I've heard reports from other my friends' parents or friends' parents, where they take their kids and say, look, this is what we're doing. We're transforming the landscape to build these power stations.
Not everyone can work on massive nation-building projects, though. I don't actually buy the fact that they say, oh, there's nothing for kids to do, or there's no jobs. You know, at the moment, we've got when it gets to about 3% unemployment, they say that's full. That's about as good as it gets in a Western society, because pretty well everyone who wants a job has got it. You know, the rest are quite happy just to sit on their ass and scratch themselves. And we're here in South Australia, we're at 4.4. Like, it doesn't get much better. Things are pretty rosy, yet serious crime is still going through the roof.
Yeah, well, see, again, this comes back to a cultural issue of what's our national mission. If it's just to participate in a globalised economy where you're trying to make a big buck...
I don't think people think like... People aren't thinking about the national economy or the globalised financial...
Well, they're part of it. That's why. They're swept up in the idea of having to make money and trying to pay the mortgage and all these sorts of things, where monetary wealth is measured in monetary terms. Well, there's more to living in a country than just that. It's not something that's been part of our culture for a long time, because you've had this policy internationally of destroying the idea of national sovereignty and actually having a country that people can be proud to develop. We haven't developed anything in this country, Jeff. Only the Snowy Mountain scheme, that was done as an excuse to try and protect the electricity generating capacity against being bombed by the Japs in World War II.
Now, if that was the last great thing, and the thing is, things have only really headed south in the last couple of years. Up until that point, we were home and hosed, rosy as anything. So it's hard to make that link and say, well, we've been on the slide since they opened up the Snowy Mountains scheme in 1966. It hasn't really been.
Actually, the directionality of our economy has been in the slide since 45.
Right.
It's been a lot longer. I mean, in 42...
Don't you think people are more comfortable and well off and better off than ever before?
Well, I think the street crime and the level of increase in street crime is a marker. It's a cultural marker, Jeff, that people aren't happy. It's not normal for young people to go out and cut each other up with knives.
No.
And that's the cultural marker. No, it isn't normal. But again, you have to go back and look into history from the 1945 period forward, because the idea of from 1945 forward was not to have the system of central banking and monetarism and globalization that we have today, but that's actually when it started. And people don't understand that from within history. It took a long time for the economy to start to wind down in the post-war period. I mean, you had a tremendous impact, a build-up of an Australian wartime economy, and you had various projects in the post-war period in order to absorb the men that were mobilized in World War II. It basically started to fall apart in the early 70s. I mean, you get more and more deregulation, more and more globalization, and, we haven't, basically, you had a changed generation, too. You had the baby boomer generation come in, so you had a completely different outlook towards development of projects and the development of building dams, even, as a metric.
Okay.
And I've seen it pretty clear from, if you look at Queensland, for example, from the time that, say, you had the, or even Sir Charles Court in West Australia, from the time that those guys basically left Parliament for whatever reason, you saw a shift in the way that politicians looked at development projects.
Oh, in terms of Sir Joe?
Well, I was up in Queensland there for a while, and I did see what he was doing.
Yes, he was doing anything he wanted and taking all sorts of brown paper bags to make those things,
I actually came, my wife was born in Kingaroy, and that's where we started our party, was in Baramba, after Sir Joe Bjelke-Petersen was kicked out or resigned or however you want.
Mm.
So we have a very close understanding of what Joe was like. I mean, people say he was crooked as a dog's hind leg. I don't know that. But I do know that
he was proven to be, yes, he was.
He had an interest in building large-scale projects. He built Tarong Power Station.
He had an interest in lining his own pocket and helping developers help himself. But anyway.
He did a good job at developing Queensland as far as water projects, after he left, that was it.
Yes, okay.
And that's the same in a lot of places.
All right, Craig, we'll have to wrap it up. But do people want to find out more?
Yeah, Jeff, our website's www.cecaust.com.au. Or if people want more direct material, 1-800-636-432 is the number to call.
One of my most treasured possessions, just as a cultural icon, by the way, Craig, is I've still got it in the scrapbook, a Joe for PM sticker.
Oh, there you go. It's rare. You better hang on to that.
Yeah, that's right. It's probably worth about, 20 cents by now, I reckon.
Yeah, about that.
I'll catch you soon, Craig. There's Craig Isherwood from the Citizens Electoral Council back in the tea.
850 games, 3,125 oranges, 300...